Sylvia and me.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, I'm Caroline McBride, publicist, hopeful romantic, and author of Four Seasons at Angelino's. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Caroline, thank you so much for being here and joining me. You're in sunny California right now, and I am in actually sunny Connecticut. This is great. I love the book. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story of modern relationships. But before we go into that, I'd like to kind of go into some of your background. As you said, you're a publicist. You're the director of public relations for the Serafina Restaurant Group. You're also the business development, but you've been in public relations for quite some time. How did you get into that? I know that you studied political science, which I did also, political science and international relations. Like, that was getting me any place. But how did you get into public relations?
I completely fell into it. My background, as you said, I was a poli-sci major for undergrad, and then I won a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship to study in Europe for graduate school, international relations in Amsterdam. It was amazing, such a great experience. And when I came back to the U.S., I had was briefly involved with political fundraising. I always thought I would be in politics, but behind the scenes. I never had aspirations to run for office because I think I'm a little too sensitive for what politicians.
Yeah, one of the things you cannot be, as anyone knows, you cannot be sensitive.
There's a lot of mudslinging. So, you know, as a native Californian, I always had this dream to live in New York City. There's something so special about New York, and it was an aspiration of mine. And I was able to move there just on my own with very little contacts, only a few friends. And I got involved in fundraising for foster children. I met a woman at a party, Linda Argilla, and we launched this great concept she had created called Artrageous, and it benefited foster children in New York City. At the time, there were 26,000, and we had great artists like Jeff Koons and Peter Beard, may he rest in peace. They were instrumental in this charity, and they would create art with foster kids and then society children. Everybody was mixed together, and we would auction the art off and raise over $1 million at our big gala. And on the personal side, I got to know a lot of these children because our office was actually in the foster agency. Edwin Gould Services for Children at the time was near Union Square. And I sort of developed a side mentoring project for these kids. And it was something so emotionally gratifying. And I'm still in touch with some of them so many years later. But after doing fundraising for about 5 years, I was enticed to be involved in a culinary startup. And around the same time, I became friends with one of the co-founders of Serafina. And he would ask me, you know, we need a new publicist. Would you be willing to do it? And it just didn't appeal to me whatsoever. I just didn't think that was my calling. But sure enough, I guess he knew more than I did.
And sometimes it happens.
And so it was around 2008, the economy was, you know, going through a crisis in New York City, and I left the startup and I called up Vittorio Asaf from Serafina and said, remember, you wanted me to do the PR, And he's like, yeah. So we had a few conversations and I met with his partner, Fabio Granato. They're both very charismatic men. And sure enough, they brought me on. And what was exciting is I was able to help develop the PR department. At the time, I believe we had about 5 locations in New York City. But right when I started, it was a time of international expansion that followed after my employment there. And I was able to travel around the world to help open these restaurants in Istanbul, Tokyo, Moscow, in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, and also within the US, in Philadelphia, in Miami. So it's Boston. It's really been a great experience. And I always say,
they started in 2008, they started opening up restaurants globally. Which was the first one that they opened? Where was the first place you traveled to?
Well, the first opening was in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And what was so exciting about Serafina is that the flagship on 61st and Madison had the most interesting characters, or I should say, they're really customers, but you know, you'd have Rudy Giuliani or Lady Gaga, you know, all spectrums from different politicians. Bloomberg still eats at the one that he likes on 79th and Madison often. He lives around there. So what would happen is you would get people from around the world would come and fall in love with Serafina, and they would want to bring it back to their countries. So that was the case, you know, with Japan, Dubai, and you name it. Most of the time, the partners had fallen in love with the brand in New York. And so I would get to work on the ground in these foreign countries with their teams and really get to see the country in a different way. And of course, have, you know, all kinds of adventures in the meantime. And personally, I've always been a traveler. As I mentioned, I went to graduate school in Europe. You know, while in graduate school, I snuck off to Lebanon. I didn't tell my family. I said I was going to Germany. So, you know, I've had an adventurous streak. Of course, Mexico, Argentina, places in South America, just kind of fascinated with the entire world.
So what was the most difficult one that you went to, that you helped with the opening?
Difficult. Well, I would say perhaps Moscow, because it wasn't completely ready. Something some people might not know about restaurants is openings are almost always delayed. It doesn't matter who. It's kind of like building a house. They always say it'll be done in December. You're like, of which year? Because it's construction, it's getting permits. So Moscow was a little challenging because we showed up and the kitchen was like not done. And we were supposed to have this opening party very quickly. However, in different countries, there's different rules and, you know, they're able to get things moving quicker than, say, New York, where there's so many permit requirements.
And what's your favorite one that you, what's your favorite place out of all the places that you've gone to?
My favorite, it's so funny. Each one has a different feeling. Like Dubai, it's right on the fountain and the fountain show. And, you know, so it's so special and unique. Dubai, as far as the looks are concerned, the interior design and the architecture is definitely one of my favorites. Of course, New York City, though, like Serafina Tribeca. So with the international expansion has also been expansion within the U.S., and Serafina Tribeca, it's just beautiful. And Serafina Meatpacking, it just has this charm and this like warmth and coziness that I really appreciate.
All right, so you've traveled all over, you've had experiences meeting all different types of people from all over the world. Now I wanna talk about Four Seasons at Angelina's. It's been noted that you were encouraged to write this book, to start writing as a creative outlet for everything that you've experienced, all your travels and so on. Can you sort of tell me who was this who encouraged you to start writing?
So unfortunately, the love of my life, his name's Paul, and he passed away in 2018 in October. And he's just such a special person and also an avid reader. So we would go to different bookstores, we would discuss literature. And at the same time, you know, he was kind of my sounding board because I would be telling him about all these crazy things happening over at the restaurant group. And, you know, and by the way, Serafina, I've also consulted with other restaurants as well. I should mention it. And acted as a publicist for beauty brands and different capacities. But, you know, it's just, was always kind of fun. I mean, to talk about the bartender who's in love with the hostess or like all this behind the scenes drama at the restaurant. And then of course, going to these foreign countries and being very low on sleep and, you know, very chaotic. I would share these stories with him. And at the same time, you know, we were always talking about books and he encouraged me to write, you know, you should write a book. You're always talking about these things. And so I, you know, it was these conversations going back and forth. And then one day I announced, I said, guess what? I'm going to write a book. And I had a different topic in the beginning, but then, you know, it made more and more sense to write what you know. So even though Four Seasons at Angelino's is fiction, it's inspired by the places that I have been to open restaurants and some of the colorful characters that I have come across. And he was very encouraging and I appreciate that because he made me want to be a better person. And, you know, it's easy. I've been with Serafina for 10 years to just stay on one trajectory. But with his encouragement, it made me think, I can write a book. I've written a master's thesis. I've had to write in other capacities of my career. So let me try writing this novel. And it was a great experience. What's funny is I thought I finished it in about 3 months, but yeah, you think you're done and then you revise and you revise and you revise. And then of course I met with a literary agent who's saying you need to develop this character more, that character. So there were many revisions after I thought I was done, but
How did you come up with Charlotte, who is the lead protagonist, the beautiful lady in the story? How did you come up with her?
Well, so Charlotte is in her mid-30s, and she's devoted her life to being a restaurant publicist. So again, I'm writing what I know. And, you know, of course, people are, is that you? I have friends reading it. Oh, I didn't know you had this experience in Hawaii. And I'm like, okay, no, it's not me. And no, that's very fictionalized. But she gives, on the first page, she realizes something horrible about her boyfriend and needs to find a new one. And she gives herself a year to find the one. And I was thinking about all the single ladies I know in New York City, or some of them who have gone on to get married, and how challenging it is to balance a career and to try to find a partner. And, you know, it's an issue of timing. It's an issue of communication. It's an issue of, you know, everybody having baggage, especially if you reach your mid-30s and you're still single. So there were those challenges. And throughout the book, she tries different things. There's a matchmaker, there's online dating, and all these things I'm familiar with, like either, again, through my own experiences or through friends. And I have a love for romantic comedy. By definition, romantic comedies have a happy ending. So that's why I use the term hopeful romantic instead of hopeless romantic. And so I decided to take this woman and have tons of adventures with a happy ending.
Okay. And one of the things, as I said, it's been described that you're also writing about women's empowerment, empowering women. How, where do you see that fits into Charlotte's character?
So that's primarily on the career sector of the book. The book's divided, obviously, into four seasons. It takes place over a year. But along with her love life and trying to find Prince Charming, she's dealing with the, you know, demanding bosses who don't compensate her to the level that she feels she should be compensated financially with her salary. And, you know, that's another thing as women or you feel often women are in a job and they think, oh, I deserve more, but it's scary to challenge your superiors, to demand more money, to start thinking, well, maybe I should leave this job if they're not going to pay me enough. And so we explore that in the novel. And, you know, getting advice from friends, oh, you should leave this and that. But it's so easy for other people to tell you what to do in your career, that when you're in your career and you're relying on that paycheck and you don't know, it's like the devil you know versus the devil you don't know what will happen if you leave that job that you've had for many years. So it's a conversation I've had with many of my friends who have different careers in New York City and other cities as well. And so throughout the novel, she gets stronger and stronger as far as standing up to her superiors and voicing her needs and her desires and her quest to be fairly compensated.
Well, as women, it's known that women have a more difficult time in not just standing up for themselves, but in what their value is. Women usually have an idea, but unlike men, they're not going to barge in and go, this is, and demand. It's that whole thing where we do need to lean in and take charge, because most of the time we're not going to be turned down, or if we are, there's room for negotiation. So that's one area. The other thing is communication. So talk a little bit about why you thought that was very important to show.
So, well, it coincides with what you were just saying, that women often don't voice their needs and their demands. So the communication is twofold in this book, where she has to find her voice to stand up for herself on the career aspect, but then also for her love life. The book explores the friendship zone. So many women, I find, complain there's no good guys out there. But I often say, okay, look at some of your male friends, because sometimes there's the good one might be right under your nose and you don't realize it. So in this novel, Four Seasons at Angelina's, you have Charlotte, and Wyatt is her main love interest. There's a series of other romances throughout the book that she dives into head first. She's desperate, nervous that she's getting older, her eggs are going to expire, you know, she wants to have a child. And so between the two main characters, Charlotte and Wyatt, they both like each other, but they're not expressing it. They're too scared, because that's another issue. When you're friends with different men, that maybe there's something romantic there, you don't want to jeopardize the friendship, or at least that's what I hear from other women. And I have been in that position myself where, are we more than friends? Are we in the friendship zone? So this is all explored throughout the novel. And often it's the more aggressive men that get the women, because they just, boom, pounce on them. And then women can go along with it and then walk away from a great guy that might be too shy or too quiet or too distracted to voice his feelings. And there's a famous story, well, famous to me, a nun once told me that she had two volunteers, and a man and a woman, and they both really liked each other, and they confided in this nun. And she told them both, you need to tell each other, but they didn't. And then along came another woman to volunteer, and she ended up snatching the guy, because she was bold enough and confident enough to tell him, you're a great guy, let's go have coffee. And one thing led to another, and those two ended up together, which
it's the word that you just said, confidence. And that's key in any kind of relationship, whether it's in your career or in a romantic relationship, it's confidence. And it's being able to exude that confidence and say, okay, I deserve this, I'm going to go after it. What's the worst thing that could happen?
Exactly. You're exactly right. I agree with you. And sometimes women can be confident in their career. Men and women are confident in the workplace. And then when it comes to love and romance, wow, there's a lot of feelings involved. It's a little more difficult to be confident in that respect.
Definitely. And you'll see for a lot of people, it's the exact opposite. It's so much easier to be confident in what you do in your career, because that can be measured. The other is more of an unknown because you have another person involved. The minute you have somebody else, whether it be a family or a friend, it then becomes a little bit more difficult to exude that confidence. What is there anything about the character, Charlotte, that you would like her to have that you realize you didn't put in? Or is there something that she really does have that you want people to know? Start with the first one. I saw your smile.
Well, it's such a great question because I'm writing the sequel now. So when you say that anything that I didn't put in that I want her to have, I'm trying to make up for things in the sequel, but basically she's growing. This is a year that she's growing. So it's the confidence. I want her to be more confident. And we see in 4 seasons at Angelino's, it starts out that she's kind of a train wreck and she's crying over this guy that's not worth her tears. And then she kind of pulls it together and gets more and more and more confident. And then the story ends. So in the next book, she's going to get stronger and stronger as we see that happen. And I do want people to see her. I do worry people who don't live in New York or see what a rat race it can be. I hope that they'll see that she does have a good heart. And there is a subplot that involves adoption. And, she does love dogs and is involved in a dog charity, but I don't want her to seem materialistic. And I made it a point in this novel not to throw out too many designer names, but at the same time she is stylish and it's New York City, and there's a little bit of that, but I tried to make sure I didn't go over the top.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to be materialistic if you're able to. Just because you like something, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't buy something else because the other thing has a name attached to it, but the one that doesn't, well, it's the exact same thing. Why not? So I think there's a fine line as far as somebody being called materialistic. And New York City's New York City. There's no other place like it. Even if you talk about other cities, be it Chicago, LA, New York has its own, exudes something that other places don't. It's just New York. So this is your debut novel. How does it feel doing something that you hadn't done before? Yes, I know you wrote a thesis, but it's not the same.
I don't think
you can write the thesis on a made-up character who may be something like you, but probably isn't. And so how do you like this new journey that you're on? It's different.
It's really exciting because I feel... In some ways, a weight is lifted. I'm living vicariously through this character. However, at the same time, I only write about places that I've been to. Every chapter is named after a different city. And I'm hoping that, especially during this pandemic, that I might be doing a small service to the community, that people who read this book who aren't able to travel or have yet to go to Tokyo, for example, they can read and learn about a new place. And maybe it will encourage them when this pandemic is over to check out some different places, because knowledge definitely comes from the more you travel, the more knowledge you gain about different cultures. And I think that people become more open-minded and they can understand each other more through travel. So I feel, it's exciting to be able to be creative and create this novel. And then it's also fun to revisit places that I haven't been to for 4 or 5 years, or maybe I was there last week. I do include restaurants and hotels that are still functioning, because these places Mel's Diner on Sunset, there's a milkshake date there, but then there's also a big extravagant wedding at Beverly Hills Hotel. And these places, they really impact people. They have their most happy moments at hotels and restaurants, and it could be a birthday dinner or whatever it may be. So I incorporated places in different parks and different monuments when she's going through Mumbai looking at tourist spots that hopefully resonate with people and evoke some sort of warmth and emotion. So it's a feel-good story. And if I can make somebody smile or laugh, then I feel like, okay, I did something good today. And you know, I know that obviously there's greater things. There's real problems in this world with hunger and so forth and poverty. So this is a lighthearted approach just to add happiness to anybody who reads this book.
It's an escape. Brighten
their day. Escapism. Exactly.
And during the summertime, you know, it used to be where you'd be sitting at the beach and outside. During this time that we're living in, for however long we're living in this, but it's a nice escape. Yeah, don't get me there. One of the things, though, that I've seen on your website, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, you have a blog, and the blog really is about different places that you've been to.
Yes. So in the book, you know, I had to stay true to the story, and I wanted to write about every chapter is named after a different city. So I give my own take on the overall vibe, the restaurant scene, and the dating scene in different cities. So the last one I did was Mumbai, which on that one, I couldn't do too much about the dating scene. It's funny. I was thinking how, you know, I was really only there for a week, one time. I've been dying to go back lately, but I can talk about the restaurants and just different tips. So it's, you know, I kind of end it, have fun and travel on at the end of each post, because I hope that people will see these places. There's this very special place called Capestel. So this is off the beaten path, and it's in the south of France. And I do have a chapter about it in the book. And, you know, Charlotte has this very romantic getaway trip there. And it's, you know, very passionate. And I had a different experience when I went there, but I did, you know, I went with a date. We had a great time, but the place was amazing. It's so beautiful. And a lot of people don't know about it. It's a home that they convert into a hotel for part of the year. It's on a bluff, infinity pool. You're overlooking Monaco. And so, you know, I wrote about that in the book, and I write about Cannes, for example, and just different cities. And I want to show people, I want to give them some practical advice. I do include transportation and different restaurant recommendations that I'm praying will all these restaurants will survive after the pandemic, and to give them sort of an outlook on these places that are, it's going to be a little different than in the book, because in the book we're only seeing it through Charlotte's perspective, but I want to give some real life advice for those who choose to travel there.
Okay. So you're working on a sequel, so I'm not going to ask you what your next journey is, because it seems that you're on a pretty nice trajectory writing this wonderful character, and we'll wait to see what happens with her, and maybe, you know, live that kind of life as she's going through it. As I said, it's a great escape. So I had mentioned your website. Can you tell us the website to go to get more information about you, about what you're doing?
Absolutely. It's my name, Caroline McBride. So you go to www.carolinemcbride.com, CarolineMcBride.com, and it has a link. You know, the book's available everywhere, from Barnes & Noble to Target, Amazon, obviously. So there's links to all the different outlets where you can get the book. And then I also have my travel blog on there. And I have a quarterly newsletter that will go out. And I hope to meet the more people, the better. So you can contact me through the website too.
Well, Caroline, this has been a lot of fun. It sounds like you're on to maybe not just one sequel, but you never know. It could be a whole series of, she's only in her 30s. She's got a ways to go. So thank you very much for sharing this with us. And it's been great fun.
Thank you so much. And keep up all the good work that you do. I love listening to your podcast, and you really are doing a great job empowering women.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.